Good morning, good afternoon. I guess it is now afternoon. Thank you all for coming. My name is Peter Ely. I'm the curator of MoMA PS1. And I've invited five painters here today who've been kind enough to agree to come talk about their work here in this very specific format. For those of you who haven't been to one of these before, the artists all create presentations of their work beforehand, and the slides are all preloaded, and it's a bit like a game show. And they each have a total of, I think, 8.5 minutes. So they each slide lasts exactly 25 seconds. Is that what it is? So for me, this is an entertaining way to hear artists talk about their work. And some of those who are here today, I've known, although maybe not necessarily as well as I would have liked to, for a number of years. Some artists I've actually done public presentations and conversations with before, and others I actually don't know at all, and so I've invited them here in part for my own selfish benefit to hear them talk about their work. So the five artists who are presenting will sit in the front row with a microphone, and then afterwards we'll all come up and have a few discussion points, I hope, about abstract painting. They're all abstract painters. I don't know if they would all define themselves that way, but that's something that at least topically links their work together. And so everyone's going to come up in alphabetical order. You have a little bio sheet in front of you. The first is Kelty Ferris, followed by Jai Howie, Jacob Cassay, Zach Prekop, and Patricia Tribe. And so, Kelty, you're on.
So hello, I'm obviously Kelty, and I make, in general, quite large abstract paintings. In fact, they're all 80 inches tall, which is exactly what I can reach without stepping up onto a ladder or a stool. So the paintings are essentially built to fit me, exactly. It's a stage, in a sense, for me to do my thing. I begin each painting by applying a paint, acrylic, and then oil paint with palette knives in this sort of vertical workman kind of way. And I each layer is incomplete, showing the previous layer, which often, in some paintings more than others, creates like these sort of punctures back to these like nether worlds of previous paintings. And then, obviously, I use a lot of spray paint, and I do these. I make these like line dot matrices to create these drawings that are performed upon this other texture that's much more rough. So you have this rough, knived texture with this sort of much softer spray painted one on top. That's much more ethereal. I at first was into spray painting because it's like a stamp. It has this implied distance and mechanical nature to it. It's sort of working my way to work away, my way around the canvas with this tool that has this distance that doesn't allow me to actually touch the canvas, but I'm free to move in the way I need to. So it's not as like mechanical as say a printer or of course, and makes this very gestural mark, but it has this distance, this sort of withholding that I like. I like the contrast between the two. This first group of paintings I'm showing you right now, there's a lot of bilateral symmetry. It's something that I was really interested in at that time. I liked how the paintings often built towards a sort of almost facial-like quality. Like this painting has a jack-o'-lantern nest to it. But it was really my interest in symmetry that led to it, not my interest in faces or people. And a lot of this group of paintings has a lot of sort of metallic gaudiness to it, an over-the-topness or a fabulousness that I was really involved in at the time. And artificial light and artificiality in general, like the spray paint and a lot of these paintings, it's actually sprayed oil paint that I use. That's like the brightest, most intense way that I can get spray paint to look. And it has this sort of lit with from within feel to it. This painting was actually, the color of it was inspired by Cher's, a dress that Cher wore to the Academy Awards, when she was dressed like this, as this nude Statue of Liberty, I think in the mid-90s when I was in high school. So there's, yeah, that's a very over-the-top feeling, and that's, I guess, something I'm drawn to with the color in general. A lot of people saw that my interest in artificiality and this burst of light as cityscapes. I was getting that a lot in my presentation, talking about my paintings, and I decided to just accept that read of my paintings and sort of go there towards the godfather of city-based abstraction, and go towards Mondrian and accept that as an influence and as a way that people see my paintings, which was really freeing to just accept that influence and accept a fandom that I have of a particular painting, specifically Broadway Boogie Woogie. So these paintings I'm showing you, of course, are all me admitting my fandom of a particular painting. They're all done on top of this sort of like these vector rays of oil pastel that I would do, like sort of these almost radiating rainbows that, where I would use every color in the box that I would get from these 48 assorted sets of oil pastel. And it was really important to me to use every color and to have that beginning layer to be completely uncomposed in a palette sense, because afterwards sometimes that layer would be almost obliterated by this very like intense compositional structure of Mondrian. This is the last painting in that series that I've done, you can sort of see me stepping away from that that formula, so to speak. Also in this, you can sort of see where I'm beginning to use spray paint in a more covering kind of way, sort of a moving kind of way, and moving away from this spray paint as a dot, as a stamp kind of way, and more as something to create like these foggy expanses that could then be whittled down afterwards by, in this case, the darker areas, the darker scraped on paint sort of whittles back against this foggy blur, blurriness that I can create from spray. This painting that you just saw, its title there is the very first one. This last body of work is from my solo show I just had about 3 or 4 months ago, and these were all the kind of titles I'm using now. It's my way of admitting the averbalness of my work and how difficult they can be to talk about at times. And so I sort of designed these like punctuation hieroglyphs to match each painting. I like it because punctuation is sort of how we organize language and make sense of language, but it's not language itself. It punctuation has no specific meaning, but it's what makes our language, especially when it's visual, make sense. And so I think that's kind of how my paintings are. They're extremely wild and have like no specific meaning, but and yet they're intensely organized. So in this last group of paintings, I was beginning to make these sort of like jagged fields, like this white and silver makes this jagged field that I sort of carve in against. And I was trying to make this form have like a biting presence to the left there. And often the paint, this is a huge painting for me, it's 100 inches tall, so it's me getting out beyond my comfort zone. These forms began to sneak around the canvas, and I was leaving this symmetrical structure behind. And I think of these forms as being barely contained and bumping up against the edges as they also reveal the punctures of the worlds behind. I don't know. I when it's hard to talk about what they might mean or what might, they might do. So I feel more comfortable saying what other people have said to me and the things that have rung true. For instance, I've been told that my paintings seem like to be an expression of energy rather than emotion. I thought that was a really exciting read of my work. Though, conversely, I've heard someone say to me that they seemed like the place where fear and excitement meet, which also rings true, and that's a feeling I feel a lot, including right now. So that's, I guess I'd like to leave that open to someone else to judge. So thank you.
Okay, I'm Jaya, and this is an installation from a group show at Taxter and Spangemann back in April of 2010. And I tend to work in very distinct groups. And this particular group, the process involved a kind of slow building up of visual information. And at the time, I think I was really interested in the way that layering, like inherent in layering, is a certain amount of canceling out. And I wanted to investigate that process that seemed kind of contradictory of wanting to build up a painting and kind of destroy a painting at the same time. And the end result would be this kind of really, really dense picture. And as I was working on these, I started thinking that I wanted to bring in some kind of representational visual element into the mix. And so I decided to do this one painting that I think we're about to see. 25 seconds is longer than I thought. this has a big smiley, a kind of crying, sweating smiley face on it. And I just started thinking that I wanted to kind of break the reed of these of being about like pure abstraction or something. And I don't know. there's one more painting here, and things started kind of opening up a bit. And all the while, as I was making this work simultaneously, actually the day after this show opened in Philadelphia, I had a solo show at a place called Marginal Utility. And for that show, I kind of was dealing with an entirely different set of concerns than the work you're seeing right here. For that show, I made 40 paintings and installed them in this way, kind of wrapping around the perimeter or the periphery of the gallery. And my hope with this installation was that if somebody was to walk in, they might see this and think, oh, this is a show that seems to be about seriality or the monochrome or something like that. And if you were to actually walk into the space and get up close to one of the paintings, you'd realize that each one was a sort of repository for a group of really, really casual set of marks. And but from a distance, you kind of couldn't really make out much detail of them. And the way I did it was I would stretch burlap over a canvas stretcher bar and slather it with this kind of gray paint. And then every mark was made by actually kind of scratching away the gray paint. And when I would do that, it would reveal the kind of primed burlap underneath. And some of it was primed with white paint, like this one. So they were really hard to see from a distance. And then a couple of them I decided to prime with red paint. And my goal with working on these individually was that I wanted to push each one just to the point of compositional stability, and I really wanted each one to kind of be teetering on like maybe not working. And as I was making them, they were really quick, and as I made them, if one ended up being too strong or even too good, I would wipe it out and try again. And I just really wanted to give just enough information to kind of break the situation I'd set up with the installation being this group of monochromes or some kind of conversation about like painting as object or something. And anyway, after this, my most recent show was at Taxter and Spangman. Oh, there's one more, sorry. That's one more. And but anyway, so after this, you're going to see the most recent work, or kind of most recent work, and it was a solo show at Taxter and Spangman, and the work, again, was kind of dealing with an entirely different set of concerns in some ways than this work. It was much bigger, and the palette was really blurry, but the palette it was really bright, and the composition was really kind of simple. Some of them were really simple and were just these really rudimentary kind of abstract patterns. And when I would make the pattern, I would tape it all off and then fill it in with a kind of very washy, kind of really kind of washed out oil paint. And that would be butting up against this kind of cold, hard white primed surface. And other ones in the show involved adding a second step to this kind of pattern. And for that, I would tape off a kind of large square area and then just kind of go at it with really bright, transparent paint and really apply the paint in a super gestural kind of manner. And yeah, and they all sort of stuck to this general format. There are slight variations, and eventually I bring in little bits of recognizable visual imagery again. And I also decided to do a text painting for the show, and I was thinking, I wanted to get my text from the most mundane source I could come up with. And that for me was a lyric from a really cheesy, like motivational techno song. And so the quote the line I took was, "No one's judging you." And I kind of liked the way that this could apply to me as I was, or it kind of offered this false reassurance to me as the maker, as I'm making it, the kind of illusion that you don't have an audience and you're just working and you don't have to worry. And I thought it could also kind of apply to the viewer as well. And, but yeah, and then there were other ones that were back to that very rudimentary patterning and filled in this kind of gestural way. And they were all either red or kind of pink and blue, and there was one green painting in the show, which it was the last one that I made, and I think it's the next image, and there. And and then after this, there's two more images of the things I've just been kind of working on now, and things have gotten even way more simplified. And as I've been starting this new group of work, I've been remembering something that somebody once told me when the way they saw it, that there are two types of painters in the world. There's dog painters and there's cat painters. And according to this person, to oversimplify, like an oversimplification, dog painters want to please and cat painters are more aloof. And but I was thinking about how it's funny when with a cat, all you have to do is take something as silly as like a string or a ribbon and shake it in front of the cat, and they kind of lose all sense of decorum. And I kind of was thinking about how I tend to work at a remove, but then somewhere along the line, I can't maintain that remove, and I end up losing my composure somewhere along the line. And that kind of runs through, I think, everything I make. And I think that's the last image. Okay.
Hi. Usually, I was telling Jai earlier, it usually takes me about 8 minutes to get warmed up to a crowd, so see how this is going to go. But I guess if I'm going to talk about where I started to think about painting, it was when I was still in Buffalo. It's where I grew up and went to school. Or I grew up like not too far from there, but I ended up going to school close by in the city. And I went to school for photography. And I finished everything a little bit early. And they let me focus on other things like writing and painting. And oh God, I can hear it in my own voice. Like, I got interested in all these other things while I didn't have a whole lot to do as far as requirements in the photo department. So I started to pay attention to painting and a lot of painting that was happening around the time of photography, and painting that was specifically in reaction to photography, or so I thought at the time. So I was looking at people like Ad Reinhardt and people that were making paintings that were... it seemed like they were made to be experienced in real time because they didn't photograph well or something. Well, I mean, I'm sure most people have seen photos of paintings like that, and it just looks like a big black expanse on the page. I got interested in these things, and I thought a really simple solution to kind of like become engaged in this was to literally engage ambient space and make some sort of surface that had a certain amount of repellent quality to being reproduced in images. And I don't know. This was a lot of thinking on top of the same thing. So I thought maybe I should just like mimic the bath processes of photography while I'm doing it. So these paintings are plated in silver. Actually, I ran into a friend in Buffalo a while back who was sharing studio space while I was out there. We got in a conversation. He's someone that kind of paints. He paints trees. He's been painting trees for like 20 years or something. And we got in conversation about being a purist. And I was like, oh, I consider myself a type of purist. And he was like, you're dipping paintings in silver. I really don't think you're a purist at all. And I said, well, you know, you had to come upon different ways of achieving that type of thing besides like traditional methods. I thought I was being very pure to an ideal or a set of convictions that a certain group of artists had. Also, I thought I was making work that wasn't really... it wasn't necessarily contemporary. This process of plating non-metallics in silver has been around for 60 years. So I think maybe these are paintings that, you know, should have been made that long ago. So we're on image number... Is anyone counting? 13? Or... Oh, so I can tell you how I make these things a little bit. Is when I was first painting, I was going all the way around the edge, and I took a long break because that really wasn't... they just didn't look good, and they looked like sculptures on the wall. It seemed to have less to do with painting. So when I came to New York, I was working for a while, and... I was trying to make paintings, and then I came back to this process by sending out a lot of things that didn't really work, and I was experimenting with a lot of different materials. But you know, even between colors of paints, they all have different viscosities. So like when you're raking something across a surface, there'll be like different types of ridges and stuff like that. And so after a while of just using what was left from painting in Buffalo, I decided to pare down the materials to a very set group so that I could have some sort of control in this repetitive way of making things. And it also like had these qualities of being removed from everything so that I could spend more time, trying to explain myself. So yeah, I pared down everything to a system of just using a certain amount of gesso and a certain amount of white paint, and that provided the control in making the same gesture. I think I skipped something that I wanted to say. And that's at the there's just applied with paint, and then there's this one raking gesture across the surface, and then it's sent out, and so there's this remove, and then I get all these really nice paintings that come back, and I can work with them in context of a group show or a solo show, and again, because of their reflective quality, I think they have this nice way of kind of like deferring context to other things in the room, especially when it comes to a group show. I like the idea that they can kind of like disappear into the wall or just refer to something else so that they don't really have to explain themselves. 20 or something? I should say also just for making these things, it's been about 2.5 years of just working on this size and a smaller size. And before that, because I thought I owed some sort of allegiance to where a lot of the ideas were coming from, I was working on a square. But when I came to New York, that became really difficult to deal with. It was 4x4, and I just changed the size to 3x4 because it fit in the trunk of my car, and I was able to have a closer relationship with the chemist that I was working with. It also just let me experiment more with, you know, what I thought was a worthwhile surface to deal with. And the smaller ones were like, you know, they fit in a mailing envelope. That's a good one. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I think that's about it. I've been doing the same thing for a while now. Maybe it'll come time to have to like break structure and try something else. I was worried in the beginning that these look a lot different when they're set up in groups, and I was worried that if there was nothing else in the room, that you know there wouldn't be anything really to think about. And the first opportunity I had to set them up was actually really nice, because there's this certain amount of like feedback that happens between the paintings. You know, you see one and you recognize your position in the room, and then you see another one reflected in something else, and it all becomes a kind of like dance. You know, you just like walk around, and instead of like examining the surface and stepping back to, you know, think about what the painting's about, you're recognizing maybe yourself in the room. In the beginning, I think it was a real challenge for me to, you know, earnestly come upon a painting, you know, because it's something that I didn't have a whole lot of access to growing up. There was a museum by me, the Albright Knox, which had a heavy focus on abstract painting. But a lot of what I got from it was, like I said, the most fertile point, like reading about things in books. So there was this distance that I had to close in deciding to become a painter. And I forgot where I was going with that. So even though they're, that's it. What number are we on? Maybe we can follow up on that part in the questions section. If anyone remember what I said, because I've kind of gone blank up here. But yeah, it's nice after working on the same thing for so long that yeah.
I'm going to show paintings starting in from 2008 when I was in Chicago, after I'd finished grad school. And I think a lot of these paintings involve a process of making an image and then covering it up. But the image is always still visible in some way. It's just sort of changed through the covering, so it's not really like canceling anything out. It just sort of changes it. So in this painting, it's started with a paper collage on the canvas, so that's the first layer, and then it was kind of spackled over in paint with a palette knife, and the paint kind of collects around the edges of the paper and the relief that's on there, and kind of it makes it more transparent in a way because it sort of highlights the topography on the surface. And then at other times I've gone in and painted around those edges with a brush or things like that, and so it kind of it ends up being a painting of the thing that is actually physically there superimposed. And I like those kind of layers to be together. And so other paintings I've made are painted directly on raw canvas. So I kind of like switching between that equally sort of specific surfaces of paper or canvas. They're like opposite in a way, but they both function as like starting points. And this one is kind of meant to be feel like it's backlit, so maybe like someone looking at it is stuck inside the painting, or it just puts the viewer in a slightly different position. And I think these different ideas get combined, especially in a smaller scale. I sort of bring the ideas together and they interact or interrupt each other. So it's kind of experimental process. And I think of them pretty individually, too. I don't work in, like, specific series very often. I just sort of carry ideas from one painting to another and let things change. Some of the things I do, especially in the later stages of paintings, I think are meant to push the earlier levels of the painting back into the surface or further away. And so I think of it as kind of working with like an imaginary, maybe 6 inches or 1 foot of space behind the painting and in front of it. And that the different elements of the painting would kind of like move through that sort of limited amount of unreal space. I mean, it's all really just flat on the surface. But I like that distinction, that kind of like, well, especially in a painting like this, that like the wash kind of soaks into the grain of the canvas. So there's things that really make you aware of that surface. But then other things that kind of create this space that contradicts that a little bit. And I think that the things that get pushed back a lot of the time are more related to my hand or the gestural elements or the part I think of more as drawing, even if it's made of paper or paint. It's kind of the part that's more attached to my movement. It seems like that's something that always that's what gets pushed away and out of habit maybe or a kind of shyness impulse or something. But so in this kind of painting, it's like two sets of lines painted over something more open and gestural, and it that sort of broken field comes through the painting and the color of the dots that are there, but also like these edges, like where the raw canvas is, comes through and sort of breaks up the idea, like the idea of the pattern or the more systematic elements of it. So, like, the two parts in these paintings are always working together. Like, it's covering something up, but that thing that's covered up always affects that more, like, structured latter part. Like, this curve is sort of comes from the gestural painting underneath. And this one, I feel, is, like, the more structured element kind of wins a little bit. But it's just sort of interrupted in those moments where the dots are missing because of this drawing underneath, this gestural painting directly on the canvas. So the light color is just the color of the cotton canvas, and then it's like this sort of graphite black paint over the top. This one's made with sheets of paper glued first in a grid formation and then painted over white, and then the red and black lines just refer to the stretcher bars that are behind the painting, but then those overlaps in the sheets of paper are allowed to, like, or they break up the stretcher bar form. So it kind of weaves together, like,
the space behind it and the surface and the kind of like optical space in front of it, and hopefully they kind of move and change position if you're looking at it. This blue color, I think, adds like a sort of a like a air or like a representational feeling to that stretcher bar format, so that it's not as symbolic. It's actually like has the element of a window or something like that. So there's always, I mean, even if the paintings vary, it seems like there's always some kind of like negotiation between that kind of those structures and like ideals, like even a color blue or a grid or a line, and then the actual like process of making it, which gets more complicated. This one has like a mirror element, but from one side to another, so it's kind of like if an image was painted and then flipped, and you sort of see them both at the same time. So I just like that the feeling of transparency in paintings, that when you put something on it, that it wouldn't always add up this way, that you could like apply something to erase the surface or to like create views through it, and it just like opens the object up in a way, or it makes it feel less like stable or static on the wall. But then I use such like static format sometimes that it's kind of a, I don't know, it's a contradiction, I guess. This painting's made with paper on the back of the canvas, so I collaged it on the surface and then just flipped it over, it's visible as kind of like an embossment or the difference in the opacity of the canvas. Like it's, you can see through it in the darker areas and you really see the white paper in the lighter areas, even though it's on the back of the canvas. And lately I started making some much larger paint. A lot of those were, well, lately I've been making much larger ones that are like 7 foot tall, I guess, this one. And it kind of just changes like the kind of control I have over it. I guess less control in some ways, but at least over that initial form. So they feel a little more like open, or partly because they also just rely on like a simpler thing, like the presence of a color, like, or the relationship of that color to the canvas. And on the larger scale, that sort of can function on its own more. And these like stretcher bars, again, kind of just shift the position of that gesture or that painting, so that it's, I just like the feeling that it's not quite on the, on the surface of the painting, that it's somewhere else, maybe behind it, or that the person looking at it, or me making it, is somewhere, other than 4 feet in front of it at all times. This one, the grids kind of added up to the point where they cancel each other out a little bit.
Okay. Hi, I'm Patricia. I'm showing work over a period of 6 years, and so I wanted to try to use this time to speak a little bit more generally and to define my feelings or my version of abstraction. And for me, it's something that comes out of vision and out of the process of observation, and it involves the kind of desire to make an image that is unnameable. And so here I'm going to try to trace this path of to kind of show how I came to make the paintings I'm making now. So many of the works began as paintings about the act of looking, and which is, of course, an experience that happens through time, and so therefore I want the paintings to allude to multiple times within the same image. So, sorry, I'm a little nervous. So, as with any perceptual experience, like how your memory of certain parts or details will magnify or diminish, I'm depending on your attention or inattention, I want the paintings to become a record of that process or operation. So in the earlier kind of watercolor and gouache paintings that you're seeing right now, I did begin with a referent. And I, for example, either a snapshot or a detail of a reproduction from like a historical painting. And I began to make paintings, multiple paintings of the same source. And each one I saw as a kind of extraction from that document. And each extraction or interpretation was absolutely, you know, singular. So that repetition, so it was a process of repetition, but as a way to generate difference. So even though there were, even though if there was definitely there are personal or kind of emotional reasons that would draw me to a particular referent, the subject more or less became a pretext. And in each one, I wanted to displace the what would be considered the ostensible subject. So by giving, so I do that through the process of painting, by giving more importance to the marginal and peripheral information around the subject, to the more material and spaces in between things. So I wanted to bring that kind of ephemeral and distant space forward and turn it into an icon, even if just momentarily. So as if it were just about to form together or just about to fall apart. So I'm looking for an image that is non-monocular, and what I mean is that it's not from one particular fixed singular viewpoint, but that it includes kind of the inconsistencies in vision itself. So, for example, just the type of disjuncture that is experienced every day, but is, you know, kind of smoothed over imperceptibly just from synthesizing views from both eyes. Something very basic, but I want the paintings to be rooted in that type of physical disjuncture that is part of the body. So the condensing of the multiple times is, of course, a driving force for the work, and also, which is basically inseparable from an image that is then presents a paradoxical space. So I'm interested in an image that is ambiguous, but not ambiguity, not a typical dictionary definition of ambiguity as in unclear or vague, but rather it is clear, there are multiple clear interpretations, but they just happen to not be able to exist together at the same time. So there are these multiple certainties, but they clash. But to me, that impossibility is what keeps the image or an image moving and alive. So out of the book of watercolors that you saw earlier, I then began to work on a larger scale, paintings that are roughly my height, and they're painted on the floor for the most part. So again, I wanted them to have this more physical bodily element. So I came to see the small abstractions that began in that found book, the watercolors, or the extractions, they, in a way, became the new referent for the painting. And basically, there began a relationship between these two modes of working. And eventually, the large paintings sometimes begin to be an image or a representation of the drawing itself. And recently, I've begun to include the space around the drawing. So, for example, this one is two works on paper leaning against a wall. So I'm including the shadow and the space around around the painting itself. And I've also more recently been seeing the works. I was going to say the works on paper, but perhaps all of them are becoming a bit of I see them as scripts or scores that can be basically performed an infinite number of times, and that each one is, you know, presenting a singular and different aspect. And then I also just wanted to mention that in putting this talk together, I was kind of reflecting, of course, on the restraints of this type of metered, very difficult, you know, kind of clock-like march of how the images are presented. And I just thought it was interesting to me that it's actually the exact antithesis of how I want the paintings to be seen, which is something that develops slowly in time, and I'm interested, you know, the opposite of clock time. And so I'm, you know, interested in making an image that appears very, very iconic at first, but then it will later kind of dissipate and become unstable and start revealing these kind of inconsistencies. So, and so this is the most recent painting. So. Okay, well, thank you.
Is this working? Yeah. If you guys all... It really does feel like a game show somehow, doesn't it? So thank you, guys. I know that format's difficult, and I have to admit that part of me was interested in, especially with Patricia and Jacob, how both of you would adapt your way of thinking about your work to this kind of presentation that in a lot of ways is exactly at odds with the kinds of concerns that drive your painting. I guess what was interesting to me, there were a couple things that were interesting to me among all of you. Everyone seemed to talk in some way about the relationship of their body to the format that they were using. And there are a lot of people who are making very small abstract paintings, and some of you actually also make small works yourselves. But it's interesting that none of you showed paintings that are dramatically bigger than your own figures in some way. That there's somehow the idea of using your body as the limiting scale, roughly, or some of you went a little bit beyond it. What do any of you have thoughts on what that's driven by?
Studio space is expensive.
Real estate.
Yeah, I guess. Well, right.
I've been to my place.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's a dumb question.
Well, I mean, I think I'm conscious of not wanting the painting to be epic and like beyond the human scale. That it is important to me that it is related to a particular body, you know, like an actual person size.
The viewer's body, or
yes,
your own,
exactly,
or
yeah,
or whatever.
It also seems maybe it has something to do with making the paintings, you know, alone a lot of the time, and spending time in the studio. And that, at least for my paintings, like I don't make an installation, or I don't do a lot of work like outside my own studio. So it's just really like, it just feels like there's a relationship between me and the paintings that just goes back and forth in that space.
sort of. I mean, I guess the other thing that was striking to me was how often the idea of kind of covering up to make things came out. I mean, Jacob covers up in some sense in every painting you make that I've seen. Well, not quite. But every painting you showed here from this series of plated paintings, the actual paint is being covered up by this other surface. Zach talked a lot about exactly how things are moved between, in some sense, a covering layer that itself has enough space to reveal this other kind of history. Is this something that you guys also think about, or you see in your peers' work elsewhere? I mean, I don't actually know if any of you guys are friends outside of this context, but...
please.
I remember I was reading Steve Martin's biography, and a closing line that he said was something so absurd that he said the audience, it was a comfortable spot to have the audience believe that the only thing that he believed in was a contradiction. And I think with the like creative activity, if you build that into like your practice, then there's no parameters, at least within the studio, so that you can go in extremes in one direction or the other, and it's a very free place to start from, I think.
Well, and I think for Patricia and I went to school together, and both of us had Charlene von Heil as an instructor, and Blake Rain, mm-hmm. and Blake, not so much now, but before, was kind of doing this sort of canceling out of the picture plane, and I think Charlene kind of has that sort of buildup of information as well in her work. I mean, for me personally, I think that's something I'm trying to exercise out of my paintings at this point, but I think that's sort of where those ideas were kind of planted in my own head.
Well, it's interesting because there's some degree of, there's a degree of antagonism built into that way of working. And then there's also this sort of sense that quite literally the history of the painting itself, the sort of earlier paintings that have been made beneath it, should have some presence in the present. That there are these the sort of multiple times that a number of you talked about wanting your work to engage in. That is a formal strategy that allows that to happen. I was struck by how common that was between all of your work.
Yeah, also, I didn't really talk about it, but that is a really important thing for me, that there's this process of these multiple attempts, and that there is a very subtle buildup, but so there's a kind of a concealment of the labor, whereas the final painting is all done in one sitting, but there are these slight clues to its history. But the kind of first appearance is that it has this, you know, more of like a spontaneous feeling.
So. I mean, maybe that way of working too kind of takes the pressure off of when you're looking at a blank canvas and you're like, well, what do I do? And your first move, it takes the pressure off of it being like, it's
got
to get
it up.
Right. Yeah, you can. Well, and it's usually whenever I would do it, I would put something down and be like, oh, I'm like so embarrassed by it and just wanting to cover it up instantly.
Yeah, for me, I think it's just a constant negotiation between exposure, self-exposure, and hiding. So, and that the feeling that you can always hide later is comforting. And sometimes I think is more the more interesting parts of the painting.
It's funny, Jacob's sort of talking about his work in relationship to the room that it's displayed in, or the other work that it's displayed with. That there's a deflection. Away from the work itself. Anyway, well, I know we don't have a lot of time. Maybe we should open it up for questions. Anyone? No one? Comments?
Sure. Hey. I'm wondering, the two terms that I was thinking about through all of your talks, first of all, really great work, everyone. But romanticism came to mind, like a romantic aspect to a lot of the work. But also an irony, maybe. I wonder if you could talk to that.
Hmm.
I think I give every effort I can to ignore ironic concerns in my work.
I mean, I'm a big Morrissey fan, and I feel like Morrissey sort of sums up that kind of romanticism, but then your kind of default mode, you can't help, you have a certain dose of irony in everything you do, at least, yeah, I'll speak for myself.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't. I guess I sort of picked this group of artists and with some degree of an interest in maybe avoiding the kind of irony question or position somehow. But then, I don't know. I think it's really hard to make abstract paintings today without some mix of irony and romanticism. So I think your question's actually an interesting one.
I mean, it maybe relates to the apologetic aspect of covering things up. I mean, it's not like irony as in it's funny or anything, but there's a certain none of us seem to want to just make a mark and then say that's my mark. You know, it's like there is a desire to add to it or to put something in front of it, and that seems related to irony, if not the same thing.
Or that there's a desire to... It's funny, Kelty, you were talking about Mondrian, whereas I was thinking about Joseph Stella or something.
Yeah.
So there's this desire to sort of use or trace some element of painting's history, whether it's Reinhardt or Mondrian or Stella or whatever. But there isn't a sense that those ideologies are important at all in some sense. It's almost more the style. Maybe Jacob is more interested in the ideologies.
Or
the convictions.
Yeah, I just think that when we look at artists from 50, 60 years ago, we that's something that we bring into making work. We can't make work like them because we didn't grow up. With the same concerns that they had previously, they didn't have the same type of influences built into what they were doing. It's you can't. I don't know, maybe it's easier to explain in no one can play music like Jimi Hendrix anymore because he grew up listening to the blues. He didn't grow up listening to Jimi Hendrix, you know. And I grew up listening to God knows what.
It's a really hard question to talk about, but I think it's something about us. I feel like we know the limits of. We want to use the medium, but we also know the limits of the medium and want to butt up against those limits and yet express something as well. At least that's how I feel, if that makes any sense. So it's a constant, I think, push-pull between those problems. I think that's when it's most interesting, when it's sort of feeling and expressing, yet understanding the limits of what can and can't be done, and then maybe trying to working around those limits. Because when you say romanticism, I sort of think of some idea of knowing what's done before or concern of the limits of what can be expressed. Does that make any sense?
Other questions?
Apart from intent or meaning or this kind of conversation or covering up and all that stuff. I mean, I guess I'm kind of interested in skills and technique and talent. And I mean, something I thought when I saw this list was wow, those people make good paintings. At the end of the day, on a pictorial level, you guys make good paintings. And I was wondering if maybe you guys could talk about I mean, it seems such an obvious question, but working in the studio, trying to be a good painter, trying to understand color, trying to understand composition. And then the flip side of that, that I think, myself included, there's very few people that really have the criteria to say that's a good painting. And we you guys are kind of a bit now, this conversation might turn into well, what is a good painting? What does it mean to cover up? But I was wondering, maybe you guys could talk about being painters, color and why do that now? Or I don't know. It's kind of a Does that make sense? It's kind of a tough question, but I mean, like, across the range, like, Jacob, like, are you working at, like, this is a good one, this is not a good one, how do I apply properly? Or, like, Jaya, like, that's a blue that slays. I can handle that blue, and that blue works in a shape. And Kelty, like, why do the dots? Like, not even just the stamping thing, but really, like, do I have control over these dots? And because I think you guys all do have that, but, you know, how or what? I don't know.
Just about my dots, it's hard not to be really specific about these things. Like, it's hard to talk about this type of thing in general, but, like, for instance, at the beginning when I first started making the dots, I liked that fact that you sometimes go, you're aiming there, and it sometimes ends up over there, because it's that finicky. And so that was something that but it's true, as I do it more, I get better at it, and that happens less and less. And so I try to adapt to my own new skills, and there's less accidents than there used to be, and so I try to incorporate that and shift with it.
I always think of it kind of as like working with the limitations, where I'm always aware of, like, you know, I do a range of things, but they're always like super flat, and I can't paint an egg or whatever, and I can't. So it's like the process of getting the most out of this pretty narrow range of things that I feel like I can do. And then, I mean, over the time, hopefully that grows a little bit. But that's how it works in my mind anyway. Rather than like thinking I'm really good at this thing, you know, it's sort of getting the most out of something.
I mean, I think that's why I've been like moving towards really simplifying things, just because if I limit what I'm doing, I can have a little bit more control over it. And I think with the earlier work I showed, it would just get so terrifying. Like, there was so much going on that I felt it was completely out of my control. And by kind of making it very austere, I feel like it's something I could sort of handle a little bit.
Were you just going down the line? I think a lot of my decisions about what to be dealing with in the studio are based on, based on, like, pragmatic concerns, like, you know, is this painting going to fit in my card so that I will allow, like, more experimentation to happen with the surface, so that I can finally achieve something that I think I want. But when you're, you know, I don't really know what that was. You know, it was just a goal that I was working on day to day, and what was going to be, like, an easy solution to a problem. I think, yeah, sometimes I'm in there and just hate everything, you know? Like, painting's a big problem sometimes.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to kind of formulate, but just what came to mind is that I am always trying to break out of some type of habit. Like, if something is becoming too known, you know, I just would want to challenge, you know, find a way that is less known, I guess.
I've kind of been finding, like, that lately I'm a little more, like, I've given into the appeal of that a little more, not in my work, but just in my attitude about art. Like, I finally would just, like, be a geek about how cool I think other paintings are, and I like seeing painting shows and stuff. And I think for a lot of years I didn't want to do that, or it just seemed stupid, you know. So I would think of art more generally, and I think lately I have been feeling, like, more of an attachment to, like, yeah, the skills of other painters.
Question down here.
Hi, I just want to make an observation and then a question. One of the observations is that even 100 years ago, a literary critic named Northrop Frye was arguing that there were many types of irony, so that irony is not itself monocular or monolithic. It's not, doesn't have to be skeptical or even cynical. It can be revealing, and it may be just a condition of memory. But the question I have is that a lot of the discussion and my observation of the sort of I would say wintry and sort of the threshold nature of imagery versus the concrete materialism of the work, and a lot of the discussion has been involved with an idea about working with limits and limitations. And I just finished a reading an interview with Caterina Grossa in Baum magazine, where she talks about, very enthusiastically in a sense, about not being conditioned by limits or limitations. And this dialogue around limits seems to be a kind of